Good morning again, and welcome to the Tea Party.
Oh, you are a bloody disgrace!
All right, thank you very much.
Hey, we're back. Yeah, basically I've got an itch that needs scratching. It's a metaphorical itch, I'll emphasise right from the start. I do have other itches, like we all do, but there's no need to talk about those at the moment. So when I started the TTP podcast, as you know, I wanted to do one episode per issue. That was its USP, if you will. Yeah, I know, sorry. Anyway, got as far as 15 episodes in before I joined up with the Scarf Bergara War after Russ and Nick from that podcast approached and said it'd be a great idea to merge, and it was a great idea, and obviously that's where I now appear fairly regularly talking about the Tea Party. Thing is, I don't like leaving stuff hanging, and that particular thing is bugging me, not being able to finish the idea of getting an episode per issue all the way through. So I thought I'd resurrect it as a companion podcast to the Scarf Bergara War. There'll be a slight change in format. There'll be no guests on this one, because the main Scarf Bergara War podcast is the place to hear guests, and I think we all know, listening to that, that it works really well on that sort of contemporary podcast. This one's just going to be me talking about each issue of the Tea Party in turn, talking about what was happening at the time, cutting in some contemporary music as I used to do, giving you stories about the content in each issue. Oh yeah, and continuing to piss you off with those bizarre jingles that I like so much. Sorry again. To be honest, it's kind of how I envisaged it working originally. But it was difficult to keep it like that with guests. I mean, the guests were great to have, don't get me wrong, but for a control freak like me, it made my teeth itch, frankly. And as I've said, the Scarf Bergara War is the place for guests. And I think this might work okay, just as a short-ish podcast. Talking about the fanzine, as I say, it was originally envisaged. So let's give it a go and see how we get on, eh? Might be shit, might be great, might be okay. Excited, innit? So we left off with Rob Bezick and Stuart White talking about issue 16, but we had missed out talking about issue 15, bizarrely. So in the spirit of the Tea Party itself and our regular misnumbering of issues, we're going to jump back in time, one issue, and we'll start with issue 15. Here we go. So the cover was purple, still using the standard design which we'd done for a few issues, something provided by Rob Bezick as whatever the industry version of Letraset was, as I recall. And as I've said before, we were moving away from cartoons on the cover, as Bill Edge was no longer easily available. So we had a batch of stock photos, and when I say stock, I mean ones I'd ripped out of the paper, rather than ones we'd downloaded from somewhere like Shutterstock, as you'd do today. I think the particular one we used here was a stockbroker, and it had been used to illustrate the kind of article in The Guardian that needed a stockbroker looking like a dick. The joke I employed, obviously, was that Forest fans wouldn't be happy having Drawn County. For anyone without access to the cover, it was said stockbroker grimacing with a Thinks bubble, saying, "Arr, it's Stockport," and a heading, "Forest fans react to the Coca-Cola Cup second round draw." It was a fairly glamorous draw, to be honest. Forest were riding high in the newly formed Premier League and were managed, of course, by the legend that was Brian Clough. Whilst the glamour ties, as they referred to, traditionally mean playing one of the better supported clubs like United, Liverpool, Arsenal, etc., Forest at the time was a pretty close second in the glamour stakes. In the event, of course, we gave a fairly good account of ourselves, and we lost each leg by a single goal. 3-2 at the City Ground, with two goals from Kevin Francis, and 2-1 at home 2 weeks later, with Chris Beaumont scoring for us. 5-3 on aggregate then, and by no means embarrassed. In the league, the games covered by this issue were West Brom away, Exeter and Hull at home, then Bradford and Chester away. The first of these saw us lose 3-0 at the Hawthorns. I seem to remember we had a poor record there during this period, when we played them regularly, but a great record at EP. We'll come to the incredibly memorable return game at EP in due course, but we'll draw a veil over this one. Big Willow had joined West Brom by this time. Not sure if he scored that day, but it's worth mentioning that we had confirmation in an earlier episode of the TTP podcast that the rumours were true, and yes, Bobby Gould did sign the wrong Paul Williams. The 6 foot white, non-Irish striker rather than the nippy 5 foot something black defender. Feel free to listen to earlier episodes for the full story. Also confirmed when Frank Skinner appeared on the excellent Strictly Kevin podcast, although ours has more detail from Phil Brennan, who got the story from the horse's mouth when he and a number of other County fans appeared on Soccer AM with Bobby Gould, something else that will be covered in a future episode. We then had a 2-2 home draw with Exeter, with goals from Big Alan Finlay and Jim Gannon, before an amazing game with Hull City where we matched the Forest aggregate score, albeit in one game. Muir and two each from Beaumont and Big Kev saw us win 5-3. We then won the final two games of the spell, both away. 3-2 at Bradford and a 3-0 tonking of Chester, rubbing salt into the wound, as we'd also won the opening game at the Diva Stadium, really? Can't call it a stadium, lads. 2-1 in the League Cup earlier in the season to help set up the tie with Forest. The Football League liked their two legs in those days, didn't they? So the three games leading up to the Forest first leg saw us win all three, two of them away, with an aggregate score of 11-5. Let no one tell you it wasn't fun watching County in those days. Slight digression re the comedy spelling of Bradford, incidentally. It's Bratford. B-R-A-T-F-U-D. That's how the town name is pronounced by locals, and thus jokingly spelt, even by the excellent Bradford fanzine The City Gent. I've seen some County fans spell it B-R-A-T-F-U-T, which is silly. That would mean a pronunciation of Bratford, which no one uses. Cut it out. So that was the footballing context for issue 15. Let's have a look inside. We still had an editorial for no other reason, I think, than that's what magazines tended to have. I'd drawn crappy cartoons of Eddie the Eagle, John Major and Alan Finlay, indicated by the headband he used to wear, so that the piss week joke went editorial. Get it? There was also one of our, quotes, funny space fillers. TTP is not the official match programme, it's 20p cheaper for a start, and it's not our intention to solicit sales from people who intended buying the official programme. Therefore, if you bought TTP thinking it was the official programme, simply take the fanzine back to any seller, they're the ones shouting fanzines quite loudly, for a full refund. Please do not feel offended if they mutter stupid bastard under their breath as you walk away. Still was an issue. People did still buy this occasionally, and one or two brought it back saying, I didn't want this, I wanted the programme. Yes. Underneath that was our Latin motto, which was supposed to translate as, these people really are pathetic. Thanks, Brendan. But did nothing of the sort. Page 3 had a reprint of another famous win, the 1-0 away victory over Crystal Palace that set up one of our memorable cup ties with West Ham in the next round. Weirdly, in those days, the Football League weren't as keen on their two-legged ties, as both the Palace and West Ham games were single affairs. I said in the introduction, in the first of what we hope will be a regular series, we are reprinting an original Manchester Evening News report from the day after a memorable game for County. We hope it'll bring back some good memories. If there's a particular game you'd like us to cover, you may even want to write about it yourself to complement the MAN report, let us know. P.S. These reports are the reporter's originals, which are edited to fit in the actual paper. They are therefore longer than the reports that were actually printed. I'm not sure where we got them from, but that's an indication of somebody that worked behind the scenes at the MEN. Because, as I said, these were the full reports that no one actually saw until this time when we reprinted them. The idea, obviously, was to help fans relive those memorable games via contemporaneous reports, bringing back the magic of bygone days. In reality, it filled a page. And despite the intention, I'm pretty sure it didn't become more than a series of one as well. The Stockport XS, which appears next, really helps date the issue, as it's a piss take of the Squidgy tapes. For anyone too young to remember, these were conversations between Diana and one of her boyfriends that were allegedly intercepted, quite accidentally, by an old fella who was in the habit of listening in on cell phone conversations and recording them, just for lols. And the same conversation was apparently also intercepted and recorded by a completely separate woman, who claimed she had recorded the call on New Year's Eve 1989, but, quotes, didn't even listen to it. I just put the tape in a drawer, I didn't play it until weeks later, and then I suddenly realised who was speaking on the tape. Yes, and if you believe that, you'll believe anything. Our joke was that the lovers on the tape were Danny and Big Kev, and we stretched it out to 2 pages with judicious use of 0898 phone line humour. That's your dad. We then have a Burnley jokes article, which is far too tedious to go into here, a piece by Ian Bennett on his day out at Wembley for the Autoglass loss to Stoke, and a piece from Norman Conquest, we assume it was a pseudonym, about a Brummie shock jock which makes humour reference to the Paul Williams affair. So it's Radio West Midlands, 8th of May 1992. What do West Brom fans think of Paul Williams? Tune into the fabulous Tony Butler's sports phone-in to find out. This was the week Trevor Summers became West Brom chairman and Ozzy Ardiles manager. Fan. Mr. Summers, I've heard the directors will be going with Ozzy to look at new players. Summers. Yeah, why not? Fan. I heard you pick Paul Williams, Ned Wright. Summers. I can't reach that high, haha. Fan. Can I have a word with Ozzy? Ozzy. Hello. Fan. Don't let him go with you, mate. Go on your own. There's then a couple of pieces from me and Rob Bezick about the potential to move away from Edgeley Park, which was still clearly a hot topic then, and perhaps rightly so in view of what later transpired with Manstock. Incidentally, if you want to hear more about Manstock, check out the Scarf Bergara Wars podcast, which gives full chapter and verse on that sorry affair.
At these very best years in this podcast we relive, but paying for the hosting is f***ing expensive. So we popped out our usual plea at a band at John Billsbury, who gave us money so that he could be the friend of the podcast. So if you're a fan of witty repartee, the fact is being celebrated like JB, send us at least 50p, and you can be a friend of the podcast. Asking you for money, it's as though we don't have shame. But in these days of social media, everything's fair game. So help us celebrate the tea party, working class or the bourgeoisie. Here's a couple of quid and you can be a friend of the podcast. Turn down shite again.
We then have a piece from Spike, who gives us the first 5 of an A to Z. A is for Aldershot. Me, Lee Bennett and Gary Hatfield in Gary's Capri. Halfway there, Gary takes ill. Me and Lee suggest a kit while we nip in a local. 10 pints later, back on the road. At the gate, the groundsman informs us it's 0-2 to the visitors. Just about get in and it's 1-2. Gary says he needs to go back to the car, so I take him. Halfway back to the car, it's 2-2. Just get back to the car, it's 3-2. Wait another half hour after the game for Lee, only to be told he's gone back home on the coach. B is for Barnsley. Les Brad's most famous game. About 5 minutes left, 4-1 down, and player-manager Alan Clark, through on his own, rounds the keeper and misses an open net. From the goal kick, Les scores, 4-2. Next attack, Les scores again, 4-3. With the Oakwell mob screaming for the final whistle, Les bags another, 4-4. Almost incredibly, he gets another chance with the last kick of the game, but misses the chance to get the freedom of Stockport. Final result, 4-4. C is for Crewe. Only a handful of county fans there to witness what David Platt recalls as his greatest ever goal. A wayward cross that was going nowhere until Platty decides to do what appears to be a backward flip on the run, with all County's players standing open-mouthed as the ball ends up nestling in the bag. D is for Daniels. Barney Daniels, the legend lives on. Barney once scored a volley at Bradford, which Kenny Fogarty used to swear was a 35-yarder that never rose more than 6 inches off the ground. E is for Eddie. The usual end-of-season retained list, and Eddie Pridham, pop side hero, is not on it. In Eddie's last game before he was released on a free transfer, he scores a hat-trick. What a hero. We also have a jokey reference to the fact that we were now doing subscriptions and the fact that we had a decent printer. Own your very own TTP compliments slip. How would you like to own your very own compliments slip like the one opposite? It's dead easy. All you have to do is state how many compliments slips you'd like and enclose £1.25 for each one. We'll then send a fresh, crisp compliments slip every few weeks. And as a bonus, we'll also enclose a brand new issue of TTP as well. And the slips, the compliment slips, were standard with compliments and then dotted all over them. What a lovely pair of trousers. Those shoes are really nice. You're looking very well. Ha ha ha, do you get it? Compliments. Herb then rips St. and Greavesy a new one because why not? Before Rob Bezick demonstrates how far ahead of the game we were with an article which basically rips VAR almost 30 years before we're all doing the same thing. Dave Stringer then rips into the Birmingham chairman. Mr. Kumar, fit for the game. These quotes were attributed to a certain chairman of Birmingham City during the past few months. You can understand the fans being incited, after Stoke scored a late equaliser and the referee nearly got his head kicked in. glad Birmingham weren't on the receiving end on May 24th. If you make us pay to video your match, we'll... I think Brendan Elwood knows what the precise wording was. After County had the cheek to ask for a share of the income from feeding pitchers back to St Andrews from a County home fixture. Given that home sides keep gate revenue, I think our chairman was right. The second event probably explains the drunken prats who decided to roll out of a taxi and ask for a fight with us 20 minutes before kick-off. The FA, yes, you know the Super League people who appointed Graham Taylor, have told Mr Kumar he's a naughty boy and they'd be ever so pleased if he didn't say the same things again. A better punishment would have been to reverse any 3-0 home victories obtained by Birmingham in October, thus giving County automatic promotion instead. Not sure about that, what that was about. I mean, it's fairly self-explanatory that the Birmingham chairman was being as much of a knobhead as quite a few of his fans. We then have a couple of pages with a Bill Edge cartoon, a Starman quiz, a list of where the bookies thought teams would finish, and a filler from Birchie entitled, "Well, I'll show me ass in Mersey Square, number 34. On April 14th, 1900, the Man City goalkeeper, C. Williams, scored with a massive goal kick, which his opposite number, N. Doig of Sunderland, touched as he went past him. If he'd left it, it wouldn't have been a goal. Dickhead." Which seems fair enough. Alan Hawes then gives us his take on the two Wembley games, Stoke and Peterborough, before we have the first of our video reviews. This one was looking at the double video, The Roads to Wembley, which many fans will remember. I think it was the first one that was professionally produced, if you will, with its own sleeve design. The club had been filming games for a couple of years, and I think copying the tapes for people, but they were just home videos, sort of BASF or TDK with the tabs broken, ask your dad. This one, as I say, was a double tape, one of which I think covered the league campaign and won the Autoglass. Weird to think that not very long ago you'd buy a videotape, whilst now you'd click onto a YouTube link, and that's not mentioning the DVD interval. We then have a report on the infamous 1-0 win at Bury in 1981, where only 9 players were able to make the kick-off, 2 more arrived just before half-time, and we ended up winning against a team that had been unbeaten in their previous 7 games. It's a game that's long been discussed on podcast and message board, but here's how the Stockport Messenger reported the game. So from the Stockport Messenger, May 1981. Headline, 9-man County defy the odds. Stockport County pulled off an amazing win at Bury on April 24th to virtually ensure the club doesn't have to apply for re-election. Snowdrifts prevented manager McGuigan and players Brad, Sunley and Galvin from reaching the ground in time for kick-off. County were forced to take the field with only 9 men against a side unbeaten in its past 7 outings. Yet County turned in a tremendous performance to end their own run of 7 consecutive away defeats, working tirelessly to cover the extra ground. The defenders, led by the admirable Tommy Sword, held out brilliantly against anything the Bury side could throw at them. By the time Galvin and Sunley arrived on the field just before half-time, County had already proven their determination not to give anything away despite the odds being stacked against them. Inevitably, County had to rely almost entirely on defence. Bury should have gone ahead after 10 minutes when Kennedy's through ball was headed back by Mullen to Johnson, who volleyed over with the goal at his mercy. Johnson's pass later found Madden unmarked in the County box, and Lawson was at full stretch as his fierce shot flashed narrowly wide. Mullen had 3 successive chances as the Bury pressure intensified after half an hour. First, his fierce low shot was tipped around the post by Lawson, who then held his powerful dipping shot before the Bury striker sponsored another over. And I've put a note there. This is a literal transcription. We don't have a clue about what sponsoring a shot means either. The cavalry, in the shape of Dave Sunley and Chris Galvin, arrived in the 44th minute to rapturous applause from the County fans and brought the team up to 11 men. Soon after the interval, County managed their first attack of the game when Osher Williams' shot had Neville Southall at full stretch. County attacked again through Rutter and Sunley, who set up a chance which Man of the Match Sword followed narrowly wide before County took a shock 74th minute lead. Tony Coyle made a fine run on the left and crossed to Nigel Smith, who chested the ball down for Martin Fowler to volley a glorious shot, past a helpless Southall. Berry hit back quickly and Madden screwed a shot across a gaping goal, but County's spirited performance had earned them any luck that was going, and they held out comfortably to emerge victorious at the end of a bizarre but vital match. We then got the letters pages, 8 pages worth, which represented almost a fifth of the fanzine. Few things to note from the letters. We weren't averse to printing praise, although, as has been stated before, we essentially printed everything that was sent in, as long as it wasn't racist, sexist, advocating violence, etc. So if people were going to write praise, who were we to stop them? There was more Wembley and video content, and a fairly detailed and well-written letter from Andy Barnes, which could well have been an article. I think the proviso for article or letter was really only whether it had been written as such. So a dear TTP, blah blah blah, yours Fred, would go in as a letter, and a piece that seems self-contained, article-like if you will, would be treated as such, regardless of whether or not they included a title. We also had the first holiday photo sent in, a county flag hanging from a balcony in San Antonio, Ibiza. The idea, such as it was, mutated into people sending photos of themselves reading TTP around the world, and we ended up with some remarkable ones, which we'll come to in due course. The letters pages ended with Ken Riley demonstrating that County would have finished second and been promoted behind Brentford, who were actually champions, if a system suggested by Chinny Wonder Jimmy Hill had been implemented. The large mental osseumed one, look it up, had suggested 3 points for a 1-goal win, 4 for a 2-goal win, and 5 for a 3 or more goal win. We'd have got 96 points because, as anyone around in that period knows, we were one of the most free-scoring teams around.
The Tea Party Podcast. It's Robbie!
We've then got Rob Beswick reviewing the match programme, outcome mixed, and a bit more Wembley from Paul Stock and Dave Stringer, and a brilliant filler from Andy Barnes, whose best comment heard anywhere last year was, if only Mickey Thomas was 22, he'd have a licence to print money. In case you're wondering, former United and Stoke player Thomas, by this time playing for Wrexham, and scoring the famous goal that knocked Arsenal out of the cup, had had a colourful few years, going down for 18 months after being involved in laundering counterfeit money through Wrexham's trainees, and being stabbed 15 times in the cheek, left lower, as Peter Cook might say, with a screwdriver after being found in a country lane with a young woman. There's a Bill-edged cartoon and more Wembley before another great filler. At the end of the previous season, as regular listeners will know, we'd run a survey, one of the questions in which was, what was the wittiest crowd comment heard in the season? Andy Barnes, again, sent in his choice, which was, Biggins, I hope your next shit's a hedgehog. Rob Beswick then gives us the TTP Video Wars 1991-92. That double video, The Road to Wembley, was doing some heavy lifting in this issue. So he's got the most inappropriate nickname for a goalscorer, Wild Bill Williams. Wild? Bill? The man who would still look cool and laid back if you buried him alive in an ant's nest. Surely some mistake. Biggest twat on video. We didn't say twat, we asterisked it, but what are you going to do? Jimmy Case for his forcing the ref to leave the field in the game against Bournemouth. You could almost hear him saying, look ref, I used to play for Liverpool. I'll decide when we leave the field. Casey, what's the score? Best Kevin Francis type slide award. Kevin Francis. Imaginative choice, Ed. For his effort against Bournemouth. At least 8 yards, always under control by the big man. Pure poetry. Most sarcastic comment by commentary team. Oh dear, as Bradford defender puts ball past his own keeper. 4-1 home. Most nostalgic moment. Watching Autoglass Trophy match at home to York. Didn't that 1400 gate just take you back to the bad old days? I had a tear in my eye thinking about it. On the subject of the survey, we'd also asked if anyone remembered Arthur, and we'd got some decent replies back. Tommy Lewis of Cheadle Heath actually named him as Arthur Cooper, although again, we said in the fanzine that we couldn't verify this. The most interesting responses came from Merv Jones of Heverley and Steve Moore of Poynton. Merv wrote, do I remember Arthur? After getting kicked out of the Cheadle end, Taylor reports circa 1969, I took to standing on the pop side. I'll never forget him. He did more running up and down the touchline than the referee and linesman together. One game in the early 70s, he actually tripped up a linesman with his umbrella, honestly. We couldn't stop laughing as the police escorted the oldest hooligan out. We need more fans like him. And Steve elaborated on the linesman story. Arthur actually features in a book written by ex-referee Gordon Hill, who, when asked about matches he found most difficult to ref, quoted, I was running the line this particular afternoon in torrential rain for most of the match in front of a paltry crowd of some 1,500. I was conscious of being attacked by an irate elderly man with a stick who attempted to crack me every time I ran past him. I was there and actually saw this classic piece of Edgeley Theatre. We also lost 3-0. And I ended the article with some of my own memories. To me as an 8-year-old, Arthur was a real jaw-dropper. It can't be denied by anyone who remembers Arthur's heyday and Counties teams of the time that Arthur was far more entertaining than anything happening on the pitch. Wide-eyed kids like myself would gawp in astonishment as he'd elbow us out of the way in order to get to a vantage point nearest the linesman who'd just given a County player offside. He'd then let loose a stream of obscenities, the like of which as a kid I'd never heard before, and which had me giggling and repeating in the playground for weeks afterwards. Best of all was his catchphrase. He'd obviously checked in the programme whence the linesman hailed. "You can stick your fucking flag up your arse, linesman. Get back to fucking Peterborough where you belong." Imagine Roy Walker introducing that one. "It's a good guess, but it's not great." Merv Jones was right, we need more fans like him. He brightened up Edgeley Park in those days when events on the field rarely did. Some Granada bashing from Norman Conquest, and why not? The away travel guide, Chester and Bradford, as already mentioned, and a piece from Alan Hawes about the best pre-season game ever. I'm writing this, it's actually an extract that Alan sent in, and this is a quoted piece. "I'm writing this after witnessing the craziest game of football I've ever seen. What was so crazy, you may ask? The final score of 7-5? Nope. Five players scored own goals? Nope. Let me tell you about it. The game involved Morecambe and Stockport County at Christie Park on August the 4th. After a dull first half, the real craziness began at half-time. As the teams left the pitch at the interval, about 80 County fans spilled onto the pitch with two footballs. They spent a minute or so trying to get the balls in the net, then someone shouted, 'All right, lads, let's have a game.' The crowd left on the terraces were then treated to the sight of about 80 grown men booting a lump of leather around. 'Will all spectators kindly leave the pitch?' the tannoy barked. The request fell on deaf ears as the lads played on. A more heated request was given, yet again ignored. Seconds later, a Morecambe official nicked a ball. With 79 or so players up one end, it took a while for them to realise that the others were racing away with the other towards an empty goal. It was eventually bundled in by a 50-odd-year-old County fan to wild applause from the watching fans. At this time, a lone policeman and faithful hound entered the fray, and the dog was allowed to eat any fan it chose. This was totally uncalled for, as the fans would probably have left as the teams came out again. The footballs were taken into custody, for a good kicking perhaps. To cut a long story short, the final score in the proper game was 1-1, and as the game finished, a Black Mariah turned up, obviously freeing two innocent footballs from custody. And as Alan added, this story appeared in a fanzine publication called Hit the Bar. Seems quite a good time was had by all. Unfortunately, it doesn't give the year in which the game was played. I would hazard a guess at the early 80s. The question is, does any County fan remember or indeed take part in this unofficial game, which seemed by all accounts much more exciting than the official one? I think we eventually established that it was a lot more recent than that, only a season or two earlier in fact, as we'll confirm in a later episode. And finally the back page, the last back page, I think, or one of the last back pages before we put adverts on there, has a film poster joke giving a Rambo-esque makeover to Danny Bergara. Touchstone Films present, "First they took automatic promotion from him, then they took the autoglass from him, and now they've taken his playoff victory away. But this time they've pushed him too far, and he's fighting back, and in a big way. Bergara's back, this time he's playing to win. And now somewhere, Edgeley Park, somehow, automatic promotion, someone, Ken Charlery, is going to pay. Robert De Niro as Danny Bergara. Danny DeVito as Lou Macari. Kim Basinger as Alan Finlay. And introducing Freddy Krueger as Ken Barber. Also starring Chevy Chase as Noel Blake and guest appearances by Steve Martin, Dan Aykroyd and Robin Williams as the rest of the Stoke City defence." Bit rude one there, but I'm sure it made people laugh. So there you go, that was issue 15. Hope it's helped kindle some fond memories. We'll do the same again next time with issue 17, after which the episodes will hopefully tally with the issues concerned, apart from the two, or was it three, occasions where we cocked up the numbering. Don't forget to follow at TTP Towers and at Dave Espley on Twitter, and listen to me and the other guys on the Scarf Bergara War, currently weekly during the season. They're at County Podcast, of course, or scarfbergarawar.co.uk. Or search for it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to get in touch with any of your own memories of the fanzine years, please do. either via Twitter or ttptowers@gmail.com. See you next time.
Well, thanks very much for watching. Keep it up. Thanks to everybody here on the floor, those upstairs, they're a terrific team. As for me, well, I'm the luckiest man on earth, and it really has been the greatest pleasure. Goodbye. Play the music.
And if a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And if a 10-ton truck kills the both of us, to die by your side, well, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. Take me out.
Oh, great pick up by Alan Armstrong.
Strange fear gripped me and I just couldn't ask. Take me out tonight. Oh, take me anywhere where I'm cared, I'm cared, I'm cared. Do I need in your car?
You're joking! Oh, this is incredible! What a great goal! Brilliant bit of skill by Chris Angel!